8 billion people on Earth by November. That's the forecast from the United Nations. But global population growth is slowing down, and many societies are also getting older. So how do we deal with the challenges ahead? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the program. I'm Nastasia Tay. Now, the world's population is growing, but at its slowest pace in 70 years. That's the conclusion of the UN's latest global population forecast. We are generally living longer and healthier lives than previous generations, but this, the report also says, will have huge implications for our economy, social welfare systems, and our environment. Now, the number of people on our planet is expected to hit 8 billion by November, and then increase by 500 million towards the end of this decade. But birth rates, meanwhile, are falling in many countries. In the coming years, global population growth will be concentrated in just 8 nations: Democratic Republic of Congo, Egypt, Ethiopia, Nigeria, Pakistan, the Philippines, Tanzania, and India, which is expected to surpass China as the most populous nation on the planet next year. The global population is also getting older. On average, a person is expected to live to 77 years by 2050. That's up from 73 in 2019. Well, the director of the United Nations Population Division explains the effects of aging societies worldwide.
Traditionally, we had many more children than older people to take care of. And now it's switching to a point where, you know, depending on how you define the age groups, the number of older people will eventually be larger than the number of children. Just, you know, this has implications for rather obvious reasons that you've got a lot of private and public arrangements to care for people at older ages. There are financial implications involved, especially for government budgets. But there are also real concerns about, the living conditions for those elderly people. What will that be like? And will there be adequate social protections to ensure that this growing population of older people is not impoverished?
Well, we'll bring in all of our guests in just a moment. But first, this report from Pavni Mittal in New Delhi.
Next year, India is set to surpass China, and the gap between these two nations could increase by 2050. This could help India in many ways. For example, India has been pushing for more representation internationally. Experts say that concerns and demands could carry more weight, especially at forums like the United Nations. On the economic front, this makes India the world's largest consumer market, one that could invite a lot more investment. Now, domestically, population control has been a contentious electoral issue. Experts have advocated for more focus on reproductive rights and justice. This includes improving girls' education, increasing the number of women in the workforce, and improving maternal health. Some of these efforts have been effective because the rate of population growth has slowed down considerably. But there are many challenges. The pandemic has reversed many of these gains. Many women have been forced to quit the workforce, and there has been an increase in child marriages. Experts say there needs to be more awareness so family planning becomes an issue of choice and not chance and coercion.
Well, there's obviously plenty to take apart from this report, but I do want to start with where we are at the moment. We're obviously living in a pandemic, and I believe the report suggests 15 million excess deaths just to the end of 2021, a fall in life expectancy. But that all seems to be a bit of a blip, given the trends that we're looking at. So we're mostly living longer, but reproducing less. Daryl, you wrote a book called Empty Planet just a couple of years back. Do you still think that that's the way we're headed?
Yeah, and even faster than we were talking about in the book. And really, the focus of all of this, we can talk about the pandemic, we can talk about aging, we can talk about those kinds of things. But the real hot point in the UN's analysis is fertility. Hmm. And that's really what Empty Planet is about. And so what's happening to fertility rates? Well, they're collapsing.
Well, with the medium fertility scenario, I believe, the UN is projecting that global population will peak before the end of this century. So 2086, at just over 10.4 billion people. Kathleen, I believe you were very much involved with the last UN report on the world's population. So this projection is obviously, as Daryl said, sooner than the last projection. What's driving that change?
Well, my understanding is that the global population projections are put together every 2 to 3 years from a number of different national censuses. And they haven't, the long range projections have not changed too much over the years. Right now, we're at a world population of about 7.9 billion. The median projection, as you mentioned, by 2100, we could be at 10.4 billion. But there's also a very wide range. There's a lot of uncertainty about population trends moving into the future, and it has a lot to do with the kinds of policies and programs that are in place in countries all over the world. So the UN has projected that the range of possible population futures by 2100 are from a low of 7 billion to a high of 14.8 billion. That is a very wide range of possibility for how population could grow in the future. And I would argue that that has significant implications for the health and well-being of people and for the health and well-being of the planet.
We'll get into some of those trends in just a moment, but I want to look at the growth that we're seeing on the horizon, the immediate horizon. 8 billion people on this planet by November, give or take a year, according to the report, and much of that growth is going to be taking place in India. So, Poonam, I was looking at the number of births per woman there, and it actually seems to have dropped. So what's driving population growth there?
So there are a number of factors. The first is that education, which, as we all know, is the best contraceptive. Girls are getting higher education levels are taking place. Second, I believe the government has invested in family planning with a focus in the high fertility districts in India. See, in India, it's a very uneven situation where much of South India has reached replacement level fertility. In fact, 24 states in India and the 6 states in North India, which had high fertility rates, the rates are coming down because the government, through its new programming, is focusing in these high fertility districts. Third, there's greater access to larger number of contraceptives. You know, every time a new contraceptive is introduced, there is a 6 to 12% increase globally or within any country where it is increased. Contraceptives are introduced, new contraceptives. So modern contraceptive methods have been introduced. And lastly, I'd like to say that we had a much higher fertility rate, let's say, amongst Muslims earlier. But the Muslim fertility rate has declined very sharply in the last 2 decades, especially in the last decade. And a growing middle class, as well as the fact that people value education for girls more than they used to, is what is helping. And finally, age at marriage is increasing, which also helps with fertility decline, as well as postponement of the first child and spacing methods.
Poonam, despite all of that, though, we are still expecting India to overtake China as the world's most populated country by potentially next year. And I see that's already beginning to spur talk of a permanent seat on the UN Security Council. Now, given the trends that we're seeing and where this population growth is taking place, Daryl, let me ask you, what kind of political shifts should we be looking for?
Well, I think we should be increasingly looking for population power to drive political power. And what we haven't brought up here is the only continent that in the world in which there is growth, significant growth, going longer term into the future, and that's Africa. Because that's really the only continent or I guess region, depending on how you want to define it, that really has still above replacement rate population. Both China, the world's largest three countries, China, India, and the United States all recorded historic lows last year, over the last couple of years, for their fertility rates. So they're not going to be challenging for global population dominance the way they were in the past. Increasingly, it's going to be a focus on Africa.
I want to get into Africa in a moment, but because of Poonam talking about reproductive rights, I want to also bring in at this point the UN Secretary General's response to the population forecast that we saw. Antonio Guterres says it's an occasion to celebrate the health achievements that have extended lifespans and reduced child mortality worldwide, but he did also criticize what he called renewed assaults on a woman's right to access health services and to make informed choices on whether or not to even have a baby. Complications from pregnancy and childbirth are among the leading causes of death for girls between the ages of 15 to 19. Parts of Africa and South Asia account for 86% of maternal deaths worldwide. And last month, the US Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade, a landmark ruling that guaranteed abortion rights. Meanwhile, Poland has also restricted access to the procedure. There's obviously vast inequity when it comes to reproductive rights. Kathleen, how does that then translate into broader patterns of inequity?
I think one of the most fascinating things to think about and to look at when we're examining population trends is to understand what they tell us about persistent inequities across society, whether that's inequities in reproductive rights and reproductive access to reproductive health care, which is still a huge problem for many people, for young women and girls around the world who would like to be able to delay pregnancy or avoid pregnancy, but don't have access to meaningful information and services that would enable them to achieve reproductive autonomy. This is a very basic, fundamental human right for reproductive autonomy that hundreds of millions of people around the world still do not have. It also tells us a lot about gender inequity and the ways in which girls, hundreds of millions of girls are not able to go to school, the ways in which women are not empowered in the workforce or in the household to be able to really realize opportunities in their lives that include motherhood, but extend beyond motherhood. So a lot of what is driving persistent rapid population growth, which as our other guest says, is happening in Africa, but also in pockets all across the world, is this indication of a lack of rights and inequities, especially in the health and gender spaces.
Well, let's turn to Africa now, because looking at the numbers, more than half of the growth we're expecting by 2050 is going to come from Africa, by which time I believe Nigeria is set to become the fourth most populous country on the planet. We're looking at decreasing reproduction rates around the world as people get richer. But I know there are also some experts who argue that Africa's rate of decrease is actually less or slower than perhaps some other parts of the developing world, because culturally the ideal family size is larger than elsewhere. Daryl, what do you make of that?
Well, I think the first thing, and the UN recognizes this in their report, the data from Africa aren't great. So we don't really know precisely what's going on in Africa. But, you know, if the past is prologue, I expect that the trends that we see in other parts of the world that, you know, have moved incredibly rapidly in terms of changing their fertility rates, mainly as a result of culture, that the effect of that is going to be significant in Africa, too. We're just having a pretty difficult time measuring it. But in places where we do have better data, say, for example, like Kenya, where they do have good population data, you look at the fertility rate in a place like Nairobi, and it's pretty close to replacement rate. Mm. So the trends that are happening everywhere else in the world are also going to be happening in Africa. We just don't know how fast, because it's really hard to get a handle on what's going on, for example, in Nigeria.
Sure. Well, some of the demographics in Africa, the ones that we do have, are also really interesting. In Nigeria, I believe 70% of its 200 million people right now are currently under 30. So the population growth that we're seeing there is also a rise in the working age population, this so-called demographic dividend that could either be an opportunity for economic growth or potentially a cause for political strife. Poonam, how have you seen that be played out in India?
So in India, the main reason fertility will grow is because we have 360 million young people, many of who are at a reproductive health age or will reach there very soon. But in India, we keep talking about the demographic dividend because we have a large youth population. But the problem is that the window is small. It is not a permanent feature. So the window for harvesting the demographic dividend is close to 15 years more at an average, some states a little longer, we have to invest in young people's education, but more than that, also jobs. For the demographic dividend to take place and become a reality, we have to invest in jobs. And at this point of time, there is huge number of young people who are not skilled to even take advantage of the job opportunities that do exist. So if we don't do something very quickly in terms of skill training, skill development, and getting jobs for young people, we are going to have a demographic disaster. So right now we are on a high and we have an opportunity. And I must say that there is a realization. Earlier we thought it is very automatic that the demographic dividend will happen. So in India, we are, while we're skilling and so on, we also need to have more temporary methods and access, greater access for young people to contraception. And finally, sex education, and especially information on reproductive, not just rights and justice. We also need access to family planning services and temporary methods. India focuses primarily on sterilization, which is a permanent method, while young people need access to temporary methods. And they don't plan families, they need access to contraception. So the earlier India begins to recognize and bring in schools, out of schools, greater information on and comprehensive sexuality education, we'll do better. But skills is something we are aware, but India's grappling with. And I'm greatly
I want
hoping
to bring in Kathleen here, because I see you nodding and agreeing with much of that, Kathleen. But do you see this demographic dividend as a potential threat or only an opportunity?
Well, one of the things that's really critical to understand about the demographic dividend is that it is realized when there is a decline in fertility. That is the thing that triggers a demographic dividend, so that the proportion of the population that is in the working age is larger. And as Poonam mentioned, it is a brief period of time. It requires this decline in fertility. It also requires investments in education and employment opportunities for that brief period of time that we have this really large cohort of the population in the working age. So it's not simply, the demographic dividend does not come simply from rapid population growth. It's rapid population growth followed by a period of fertility decline that results in this big chunk of the population in the working age realm. And that is really difficult to accomplish, but there are a lot of opportunities for it, but it does require lots of investment in contraceptive options, as Poonam was mentioning, in sexuality education and things that advance gender equity, in access to reproductive health care in a wide range of contraceptive methods, and then also the plethora of education and employment opportunities that need to be ready for this very large cohort that is coming into the working age population.
But that surely also has some political implications. I'll bring Daryl in here. What do you make of where this could shift things, particularly for the developing world?
Well, I think the really interesting thing for me in listening to this conversation is how much this conversation is going to change over the next 10 to 15 years. Because the conversation is going to shift from this kind of 1970s, you know, overpopulation, population bomb type of a discourse, over to one, in particularly in the developed world, where this is going to get very controversial, about how do we promote having children? Because we've got many countries now, and the UN identified them in the report, I think it was 61, that are now actually experiencing population decline. Countries like Italy, for example, are losing 50,000 people a year from their population. Japan loses about 500,000 people from their population every year. Spain loses about 50,000 people from their population every year. And we have a whole series of countries in places like Eastern Europe in which the numbers are even more shocking. So what we're going to start seeing is a shift in the conversation, I think, in away from just meeting the challenges of the developing world, to start talking about what we're going to do in terms of population management in countries that are really going to be challenged by aging and shrinking populations. By 2030, the entire global baby boom is going to be 65 years of age or older. We're not ready for that.
Well, let's talk about this aging population then. Poonam, how's that been playing out in India? Because we're talking about a broader population of older people living longer. That has resource implications of its own.
Yeah, that is actually something that's very worrying for those of us who work on population issues, because India does not have any social security, whether it is health or it's financial. So we are worried about the aging population, but there isn't much work being done in India. It's only actually after the last report of the UN that there was even conversation beginning about aging. And in India, where a large percentage of people, there's huge migration from the villages, there is very little security in terms of caregiving also for the aged. And India has to prepare itself for making universal health coverage a reality for across India. We have to strengthen our public health systems. We have to reimagine our public health systems, which we recognized during COVID, finally, that our public health is in ICU. Thirdly, I think financial investment for fiscal support and so on to the aged population is something that India will have to plan for and invest in.
I want to turn to the environment, because I don't want us to run out of time before getting there. And we're talking really about constraints on resources here. And obviously a huge one is what we're going to see in terms of climate change impacts. A lot of this population growth is going to be taking place in climate vulnerable areas. I mean, at the very simplest level, more people on the planet means more strain on resources. We're already seeing concerns around food security. Kathleen, are you worried about the population trends we're seeing?
I'm very worried about it. And I want to disagree with Daryl a little bit about which of the population trends we need to be most concerned about. Certainly an aging population is something that we need to plan for, prepare for, and have adequate social security systems in place to manage an aging population, and to think about how we adequately employ a smaller proportion of the population in the workforce in some places. But I really think that the larger problem is that the population is still growing globally from around 8 billion today, and it could be up to 14 billion by the end of the century. Hopefully it won't be there, but it depends a lot on what we invest in.
Okay, I will bring in Daryl here, because we are talking about this peak and decline, and this is going to happen literally within the next 100 years. So obviously a debate about whether that's a good thing. Daryl, go for it.
Well, look, any estimate that says it can be between 8 and 14 million is, why don't we make it 7 and 14 million, is 100% variation. That's not really much of an estimate. And really, when you take a look at the more compelling evidence about what's happening, hold on a second. I let you talk. Let me talk. If you take a look at the work that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation published in The Lancet, that was done by a whole global series of demographers, and it was done pre-COVID, they don't even come close to that number. I mean, so I really have a lot of questions about how the UN does its modeling. I think this whole population momentum theory is just that, a theory. I think there's a lot of cultural change that's taking place around all of these things that are actually going to cause fertility decline to accelerate. The population increase is not going to get even close to 10.4 million people. We're going to be probably somewhere between 8 and 9 billion people, which is not much further off of where we are today. But it's going to be a very different mix of people. They're going to be highly urbanized, and they're going to be much, much older than the population we have on the face of the earth today. That's the challenge we're truly facing.
Both challenges and opportunities. Well, we'll have to leave our discussion there for today, but we'll be keeping an eye on how this all plays out over the coming decades and centuries. Thank you to all of our guests. That's Kathleen Mogulgaard, Daryl Bricker, and Poonam Mutreja. And thank you too for watching. You can see this program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, do go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. And remember, you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Nastasia Tay, and the whole team here in Doha, bye for now.